Go Loud presents Murder Most Irish. Find it first on the Go Loud app and on all major podcast platforms.
I could kill somebody with my ties.
I don't kill anybody with anything. I've just would.
I could kill somebody. I could kill
all
you.
Good?
All good.
All right. You got him.
I said him, not you. I was talking about him.
Okay.
I could kill you is what I did. But I could kill you too.
I could.
I've got the rage in me.
Well, you'll be like when, you know, when they're like, you can't bite your own finger off because your brain won't let you. That's what it'd be like with you and me. My brain won't let me. And I'd survive.
I think I'd get close to like... in and then we'd make love.
I feel that would like they do in the
movies.
Happen.
You know, like in the movies when
they're like, "I hate you."
They have
"I hate
like,
you," and then like,
"Yeah," like, and then they're like,
"Are you talking about that one specific movie with, on the staircase?"
Oh, I'm next with Donnie Darko.
No, you also about that one movie.
Yeah, that's Donnie Darko.
No, it's not that one. Is
no,
another one.
It's not. It's not Donnie Darko. It's
there's that one you always talk about.
Donnie Brasco. Donnie Brasco.
Is this the one with Johnny Depp?
Yes, but that's not the only one that happens in.
People love having sex on a staircase.
But that scene in particular, she's like, "I'm gonna fucking kill you." She's like, "Where the fuck have you been? I thought you were dead. Your children and I have not seen you in months."
Is this the plot?
Yeah, because he's undercover.
Oh,
and then he's like, "Hey, leave it to me alone, a bibbidi babbidi," because he's Italian.
Oh, he's Italiano.
And then she gets real close to him, and he gets real close to her, and then they fuck on the stairs.
I think
isn't Anne Hesh's death
horrific?
Anyway,
I think acting is top three most embarrassing things on the planet.
100%.
I don't know how people do that. How do you, like, you know when they're making movies and you see them and they're like, they're like somebody's pretending to have sex with somebody, but the person's on top, so it's actually the cameraman that's like,
"Oh yeah, I never thought about that until now."
How are you doing that? How are you doing?
Yeah.
How does work? Well,
yeah.
Let me tell you. Also, I know it's not sexy. I know it's not a sexy situation because there's people around.
Oh, I
people definitely get hard on.
Do you know? Would you like to know a story?
Yeah.
There was an interview with Jessica Chastain,
right,
where she was talking about doing a sex scene,
okay,
with someone that she was really attracted to,
right,
and really wanted to, like, you know, be together with.
Okay.
And while they were in the sex scene, she said his name. She didn't say the character's name. She said his actual name.
Oh, shit.
And she said it over again.
Oh, shit!
And she was like, oh. She's like, it was so embarrassing. But also, that's not acting now.
No, that's like...
And also, yeah, no, there is, like, stories of them getting, like...
Because there's this...
Most of them, like, tape it down or put stuff on.
Yeah, they have those little... cock socks, they're called, where they put them over them. But there's some sex scenes in some films and television shows where I'm like,
"But there are movies where it's actually real sex."
I know, but there's like that one that Lars von Trier did, Nymphomania. There's real sex in that, but they're porn actors.
Yeah,
so they take the actors, Willem Dafoe and the other actor, and they intersperse them, but the actual sex acts are done by porn actors. I know that, but like there's this show called Insecure. And it's, I can't remember the name of the writer, the actress. What's her name? Anyway, she's a black actress, black writer. And there is, I watched like the first four episodes of it and it was just, I know I'm going to sound so puritanical, but it was just too sexual. I was like, I don't need to see this. I don't need to see this constantly. Why are we constantly having sex scenes? Like one or two, grand. Every 15 minutes, don't need to see it. But there's this one sex scene
What's
in it. Issa Rae is the name of the actress and the writer. She's a very famous actress. She's... President Barbie in the Barbie movie.
Oh, she's beautiful.
That's Issa Rae. So she wrote this show called Insecure. And there was one particular sex scene in it that I was actually had to Google to be like, were they really having sex?
Where do we get this show?
Just go home and write your husband and stop looking at dirt. Filth on the internet. I can't remember what I watched. I only watched the first four episodes. And then, oh, actually, sorry, I'm eating. It was really well done, really well written. She's a fucking great writer. But there was just too much.
Banging.
Like, come on. Can I not just... I'm trying to have dinner.
My other thing about the movies is... Like that scene in fucking...
The talkies?
Yeah, in the talkies, right? Does nobody turn around to the director and go... Life... Dialogue wouldn't ever happen like this.
Nobody would talk to each other like this.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the writer of the Gilmore Girls, did no one sit down with her and go, no one in the history of the world has conversed like this.
Love that shit. I'm going to tell you something about that show. I hate that show so much.
You always hate that show.
It is the most twee bullshit I've ever seen in my life. And it is the most white shit that I've ever seen in my life.
It is the most white shit.
And I'm just like, I don't like this. But also, I understand why people like it, because I think it could be very much a comfort show. Because it's a little small town. It's always autumn.
Yes.
Hey, we have four seasons. Autumn, 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 and winter.
Yes.
And winter is Christmas and everything else is autumn.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's, so I get why people like it. It's just not for me.
Yeah, people do love it. Rachel, it's Rachel's comfort show.
Yeah, it's a very much a comfort show. I can understand that. I just can't stand anybody in it.
And I tell you what, I'd fuck the shit out of that little man's wonky mouth.
Which one is that?
Jess.
The guy who owns a coffee shop?
No. His name is something else. Jess is the guy with the wonky mouth from... He's from that terrible other show about the twins and the black kid that they adopt.
I absolutely love how well we're breaking down everything for everybody right now. I hope you're taking notes.
His name is Milo Ventimiglio.
Ventimiglia. Oh, he does have a... Oh, this guy!
Yeah.
Let me tell you something about this guy.
He's a paedophile.
He was in a show where he was a lot older than the girl, the 17-year-old
Hayden Penn
girl.
Is here.
That's the one that he was dating.
Yeah, yeah.
But ever, you seem to have forgotten that for... your vagina, haven't you?
But I didn't forget it. I just told you I knew about it.
The vagina wants you. Even worse! That doesn't help you in any capacity. Look, I didn't forget. I simply don't care. That's just what you said.
In my sexual fantasy, I don't care.
What's with him?
You like I don't, I just think like a little wonky face.
He's got a very wonky...
Yeah.
I watched a movie. Oh, one of the worst things I've ever watched in my life. But my mum, when I was down home, we were bored and I was like, I'll just put this on. It's on television. So it's about this movie where he was a race car driver.
That guy?
Yeah.
Wonky Mount Man.
Wonky Mount Man was a race car driver and they had, the movie was told from his dog's perspective and the dog had like a human voice. It was so bad, but also terrible things happened. So I'm going to spoil this movie for you. I don't know what it's called. Talking Dog Man. I don't know what's going on. So in the movie, he has a dog.
Was there a gas leak in your house?
My mum was like, what is this shit? And I was like, there's nothing else on, Kathleen. I can't keep watching Judge Judy. So I put on the Talking Dog. And in the movie, he has a dog and he loves the dog. And the dog is like, oh, my best friend, whatever. And then he meets a woman. And they get married and have a baby. And then she dies from cancer. And then her parents take the kid and won't give the kid back. It gets very intense. But throughout the entire thing, and then the dog dies. So...
Jesus Christ.
That was the movie. I can't remember what it's called.
Did you sob your little heart
out? I said, this is the worst shit I've ever seen in my life. Why are we watching this, Kathleen? But I was like, there's nothing else on.
I don't
want to
watch it with the sound off.
Me just watched it. He reminds me of somebody and I don't know who he reminds me of. Somebody we know and I don't know who it is.
Oh.
And I'm just like, no.
Yes.
I called Tom York a physio fuck on Instagram today and then I realised that might be offensive.
Fuck, he's a physio fuck. I call him a fizzy-eyed fucking Zionist as much as I want.
He's a filthy Zionist.
A filthy Zionist.
Dirty, filthy Zionist.
Yeah. But they always have been.
Yeah, they always have been.
People reached out when they went to fucking play in Tel Aviv and were like, please don't do this. And they were like, no, music's for everybody. No, you're going there because you support what they are doing.
I know Johnny Greenwood's wife is Israeli.
Is she Zionist? Well, she's a photographer, right?
I don't know. I have no idea. Shout out to
their absolute fucking silence, but would tell me that they're fucking Zionists.
Shout out to the Israeli youth that are currently fighting back against the genocide and are refusing to join the IDF, which is a massive movement at the moment. They're doing phenomenal. They're going to go to jail because of it, because you're jailed if you don't go to the IDF. Join with the IDF. So massive shout out to them because you know it's good to see people actually fighting back within the colonialism. Also. Shout out to, I know I always take the piss out of Fontaine's DC, but shout out to, I think it's their bass player who received an award at Rolling Stone yesterday, the day before, and his speech consisted of free Palestine, free Palestine, free Palestine, fuck Netanyahu, and fuck Zionism. Because that's what needs to be said, and not a single person in that room had previously said it or after him said it. So, I talk shit about Fontaine's DC all the time, but like that is actually commendable. And I know it's not, people are like, oh, he didn't do anything. He did. He went into a room of people and was like, this is who we are. This is what we stand for. This is what our music stands for. If you don't fuck with us, piss off.
Yeah, yeah.
So the genocide is still happening. It's obviously Christmas time now and it's hard. It's quite difficult to think about those things in the context of like everybody's families getting together and it's Christmas and we're meant to be happy. But just please remember that this is still happening. please keep talking about it. And it's deeply sad. And I know that there was a ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel, and then Israel broke it 5 hours later.
But Israel also do this thing. So it's really, people are ceasefire, right? Mm. And then there's a ceasefire announced. And that's almost worse for the people on the other end, because Israel do this thing where they like drop as many bombs as possible in the hours before the ceasefire time.
It's horrific.
They're fucking
evil.
Psychopathic.
They are evil.
Maniacs.
They're just pure evil. Like, there is no other argument for this other than this is pure evil. And that has been fully funded by the Democratic government in America, which needs to be spoken about. And and to say that that it's going to be worse under Trump is insane, because nothing could be currently worse than this. Whatever happens is just an extension of what's currently happening. So I need people to stop acting like, because Trump won the election, that we're not meant to be allowed to be angry at Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Yeah, like,
they what they did is they made their bed and now they're lying in it. And that octogenarian old fuck couldn't give two pissants what happens to the people in Palestine.
No.
He has been a warmonger since he stepped into the Senate.
Yeah.
This is nothing new. He went ahead and gave Ukraine American warheads to bomb Russia and then went, bye!
Bye.
It's sad.
We're going to America next year. Stop it.
Fuck them. I don't
want to let us in.
They will let us in. Although, they'll probably make us check our social media. He'll probably bring that back in again.
My visa's already approved.
I'm not getting in.
Do your visa now.
I do my visa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine's already approved.
But yeah, I don't know. It's sad. I just wanted to say that about Palestine, because it's difficult to talk about it this time of year. It is. And it's understandable that people don't want to talk about it sometimes, because they're like...
No, but you can see that it is fading on people's algorithms, and people aren't seeing as much of it, and people are kind of...
My entire algorithm is Israel-Palestine, because I talk about it a lot, and people that I follow talk about it a lot, so it's constantly coming up. But yeah, life is hard at the moment.
It is.
Life is also hard because it's coming up to Christmas, and I hope everybody's okay, because I know this can't be an easy time for people sometimes, so I hope everybody's all right. Look after yourselves.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
That's
all you can do.
Don't buy into the fit into your little black dress by Christmas. Fucking suck my dick. I'll fit into whatever I want. I'll be a stuffed sausage rolled around on Christmas Day.
Yeah, it started already.
Oh, people are like, take this to lose this. Fuck off. And then a minute Christmas is over, it's like 24/7 fast. Let's go on a fast. Do you want to do a juice cleanse? Only eat steak. Steak, 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 steak.
And it's like, hey, Carrie, if
do you want to try the cabbage diet?
Yeah, oh, let me tell you, I worked for a lady. I'm not sure she's going to hear this.
I hope she does.
I worked for a lady years ago, and she used to do the cabbage soup diet, and I used to go down to her house, and it just smelled like somebody had shit on the floor.
Yeah, cabbage is...
Farts are
like
so
bad. I made cabbage today.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Delicious.
But I make it in a way that all of the nutrients...
Gone.
Oh!
Done out the door.
Completely replaced they with said, salt and butter.
Yeah. But it makes me fart massively.
But when you're cooking it, it does smell... lift the pot up and you're like, oh, fuck.
Like, they would drink like 3 bowls of cabbage soup a day, and that's all they'd eat.
You know, it's... And also, you must get, like, because there's so much iron in cabbage.
So much.
So you must get really constipated.
Yeah. But, like, she would fart like this.
Fair play.
It was rotten.
Living her life.
But then, obviously, she couldn't... It's not... You can't keep doing that. It's not viable. Like,
no,
you can't
God,
keep
no.
doing that to yourself.
My point is, do whatever the fuck you want. Don't be listening to anybody. Take a nice photo of yourself. Fucking have a round belly. I mean...
Who cares?
Who gives a fuck?
I just think it's at this
you're
point...
You're on this planet for a very short period of time. If you think your body and looking a certain way is somehow going to make you happy, it isn't.
Mm-mm.
Like,
let me tell you, it's not, unfortunately.
Also, round bellies are sexy.
They are. And... I know it's difficult at the moment because obviously the tides have turned once again, and now we're back to the super skinny, heroin chic era of bodies. That seems to be what people want to be. So that can be quite difficult for people to witness and to look at. Plus size models are being pushed out of the industry again. Everybody is on Ozempic. I need you to know that everybody is on Ozempic.
Yeah, or Mounjaro.
If there is any famous person that 3 months ago was a normal size and now looks like they're dying.
Yeah.
It's Ozempic.
Yeah.
It's not a new diet. It's not working out. They're not looking after their health or being healthy. they're taking Ozempic.
And they're all going to the same doctor for their facelifts.
Oh yeah, they all have that same, the new whatever
it is.
Oh
my god.
They're all going
on. Just, anyway.
Anyway, America, not America, excuse me, I beg your pardon. Hollywood and that industry is fucked. Everybody in it is fucked. They're all so messed up.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for so many of them because you can see that they're all so messed up. Don't pay any attention to that shit if you can. Turn it off. Block people if they're doing that crap. Look after yourselves. Christmas is hard. Because what they do is they make it like Christmas. Eat everything. Fucking shove everything in your face. Marks and Spencer's. Put it all in your fucking big fat stupid mouth, you fat fucks. And then come January, they're like, hey, do you want a 4-litre bottle of water with lemon in it?
Yeah.
Carry that around the office. Carry that around the office.
So do we not have housekeeping? Housekeeping. Yeah. I do.
Okay, housekeeping.
So, I would like to give a shout out to Lee and Leah.
Leah.
I met Leah
at
the Burrowers last night.
Can I ask? Yeah? What is the Burrowers?
It's a play.
Oh.
You know the show, The Burrowers?
No.
It's like movie. It's about these little people that live.
Oh, the little people.
Yeah, yeah. It's for kids.
How do they do that in the theater?
It's actually really well done. And the set design was amazing.
Very
and you know
cool.
the boy from Moon Boy?
Yeah.
He's in it. Yeah.
Oh.
There's like three characters in it. He's really good. It was really, really good. And I actually was really disappointed at how few people were in the theater last night. I felt really bad for them.
Has it been on for long?
I don't know. But it also, I think they have matinee shows and it is kind of like for kids to a degree.
Okay.
So I think maybe the late showing on.
That makes sense. So probably, I'd say their matinee shows are probably for.
But it was really, really good and there are still tickets. And if you want to bring your little kid, it is actually really great. And how they do it is so smart and so clever.
Ah, that sounds fun.
But anyway, I met a lovely girl there named Leah and she was asked to give Lee a big shout out because apparently they're going to be very disappointed that they weren't there to meet us.
Oh, well, hi Lee!
Me. And yeah, so thanks for saying hello.
Hello, Leah was who you met.
Leah is who I met.
Hello, Leah!
Jerry the Hutch is
he
out.
He didn't get in. Shout out to Ireland for doing the exact same thing we've done for the last 100 years.
Fianna Fáil, Fianna Gael, back in.
Back in, baby.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change.
The Greens are out, but the Greens are out. Social Dems in.
Holy shit, the Greens, they were like.
Yeah, but the Greens, so I, listen, as I said to you today, they did themselves no favours.
We should go to Phoenix Park again.
I have been restricted with my access to the Phoenix Park and it deeply affects me.
Claire is very upset about this.
Fucking stupid Green Party. Phoenix Park, for anybody who's not from Ireland, is a it's actually the largest park in Europe.
It's a gorgeous park.
Beautiful. It's really close to me and Emma. I use it all the time. There used to be parking on the main road of the Phoenix Park.
There was.
Which is, it's a very, very, very long road. And the Green Party were like, no, we're getting rid of all of that and we're getting rid of all of the parking at the side and you now can only park in these designated areas that close very early. So I can't actually use the park anymore because I can't get down to it in my car and park and go anywhere.
Go anywhere.
Because I work full time. So they completely removed my ability to access
the Phoenix Park. They fucked her is what they did.
They fucked me and I didn't vote for them because of that. Do I think that they have a number of great policies around the fact that we need to look after the world? Yes. Do I think that they went in way too hard with like the farmers and small businesses and made people's lives way, way, way more difficult when there is already a cost of living crisis. Yes. So, yeah, fuck them.
But also, they make Sarah's day worse with the Phoenix Park.
Yeah, that's the only reason I don't give a fuck about anybody else.
Much more important
like,
than
it is much more important.
Shout out to the Green Party. They got fucking shot on.
Shafted.
People said, see ya. Have a nice day. Have a nice day. I know Sinn Féin have, what was it I thought today? 20 seats to anyway, whatever. Sinn Féin, I don't know. They're probably gone. You know what? That's that.
Is Simon Harris back in?
I think so.
Jerry the Hutch did not make
Jerry,
it.
Jerry did not make and it. See I the interview you what, with him?
It's, where he was like, are you going to run again?
Starts.
And he does a little jog. So anybody who doesn't know, I've done the Regency.
If you didn't Google Jerry the Hutch.
Jerry the Hutch.
Jerry Hutch said,
listen to this podcast, he's a lovely man. And we have no beef with him.
A gent, actually.
Yeah.
I think you'll find.
Yeah.
Gentleman.
And I think he has a beautiful haircut.
And I think his family and everybody surrounding him and all his very well-to-do colleagues that he works with are great people.
I think the fact that he has 17 bodyguards.
Is normal.
It's normal.
Totally normal. No beef with Mr. Hutch.
Yeah.
Best of luck with it.
Jerry the Hutch the Monk.
Thank you for your service.
Thanks.
There's a guy, a comedian that I watch. I don't really watch him, but I've seen his stand-up. And his name is Jeff Arcuri. I'm not sure how to pronounce him. I find him very funny. And whenever there's a soldier in the he does crowd work. Whenever there's a soldier in the crowd, he's like, "You soldier?" And he goes, thank you for your service. And he blows them a kiss. And it makes me laugh every single time. He's very funny. If you feel like getting a cheer up, Arcuri, I believe, is how he spells his surname. And it's Jeff, J-E-F-F. And he's very funny. But he's
do,
a man.
You can so, stop
I
mean, what we do. We
doubt it. I've not noticed. Do you have anything else? I feel like we do, and I can't remember any of it because we didn't write it down. We were just
fucking talking about shit and having a great time, and that's all I need at the moment.
Yeah, me too.
I'm in therapy again.
I'm not, and I feel like I'm going insane. Talk every therapy day. Could you imagine we just in therapy together?
Hi.
What'd you say to her?
You're like the scene in Stepbrothers. Hello, Miss Lady. What did you say to her? She's never done anything wrong.
I think you'll find that's incorrect.
I think you'll find her mother is the problem. Excuse me, sorry.
And the only problem here is her mother.
See, if you ever say that to her again, I'm going to punch you in the throat. How much would you like to be paid for this session? A terrible Yelp review.
Do you want to get paid for this session? Well, you can't.
Don't make eye contact
for
her.
Can you leave reviews on therapists?
You should be able to.
But then I feel like there'd be like personal vendetta shit.
That BetterHelp, you have to be able to.
Yeah. This, I'm reading Anne-Marie Tendler's book.
Oh, yes.
So Anne-Marie Tendler, for anybody who's not engaged, is John Mulaney's ex-wife. Her book is called Men Have Called Her Crazy. And I have never read a book that is more NDA'd in my entire life.
Why did she write it?
His lawyers came in and said, probably his daddy, if you say any of this, we're going to sue you to within an inch of your existence. Like, it is crazy. There is nothing about Mulaney. Nothing. There's everything about her ex-boyfriends, because people were like, well, it's a feminist piece, maybe she didn't want to talk about her husband. But she talked about all her ex-boyfriends, every single one of them. And also, also
her husband fucking cheating on her.
Like, it is like crazy. When I tell you that his daddy and mummy came in and said, hey, we're high-powered lawyers, if you say anything about our son, we're going to sue you to the end of your life. It is NDA'd up to the bollocks. Like, she doesn't even mention him. She mentions him twice, I believe. The first time she's in rehab. Well, she's not in rehab. She's in a mental health facility because she is anorexic and she's also self-harming. And there's a part where one of the girls that she meets asks her what she does, and she says she's an artist, which she is. But then she says, oh, I feel like I'm lying. I actually rely solely on my husband's income. That's when he's mentioned. And then there's another time and that's it. He's not mentioned. And the thing about her in this book is that girl can hold a grudge. Like, she is grudge filled. Like, she's really angry at men. Very, very grudge filled. So for her to not mention the man that divorced her out of nowhere and then got another woman pregnant within a month.
Yeah, after them being like, yeah, we're not having kids. And her freezing her eggs.
And her not to mention him. It's such an obvious blind spot in the book, and it's so clear that this is an NDA. So all his fans were like, oh, he didn't do anything wrong. No, she is NDA'd. You can tell by reading the book.
Do you think that man didn't do anything wrong?
Also, what's wrong with his face?
He's had something done.
Is that surgery?
He's either had surgery or he's had like filler and Botox.
What the fuck is going on? He's a different human.
Yeah, he looks insane.
Like, he looks like Handsome Squidward.
Yeah, so he's got like, it looks like he's had something done with his jaws.
It's crazy.
Jaw. And he also, but when he came out of rehab, because he looks tired.
He looks exhausted.
He has developed like very, very bad bags under his eyes. And they're like significant and they never really go away. It looks as if maybe he's trying to like do something around that, because it's definitely, but also when you've been doing massive amounts of like drugs period of time, it definitely changes you and you get like coke bloat and all of that on your face.
But his
like,
face,
remember Chino Moreno when Chino was on drugs?
Well, his face is a different shape, Sarah.
Well, you know, he's 100% no, by me saying I think he came off the drugs and I think his face changed dramatically, and I think he's had some work to try and fix it. But he also is not a good person.
No, he's not a good person. And that's the thing about him, is like, he played, the reason he bothered me so much, it's like the wife guy.
Oh,
his entire comedic career, his famous comedic career, was about his wife.
Yeah.
and like saying, calling her a Jewish bitch and stuff. Like that was his like, entire
career. And if not, like calling her a Jewish bitch, talking about like them not wanting to have kids and them having this dog and them choosing this life for themselves and how lucky he was to have this wife.
And then he...
And he was, one, doing massive amounts of drugs. Massive amounts of drugs. And clearly she was sick too.
She was sick, yeah.
And then... I'm sorry, like, we're not fucking NDA'd. I don't know this bloke, but he was clearly riding that other young one.
Of course he was. Like, a month after they separate, she's knocked up. This, by the way, Olivia Munn, who, when John Mulaney went into rehab, tweeted him, didn't know him, tweeted him, was sending you the best, John Mulaney, clearly trying to ride him.
Like,
it's just the whole thing is fucked. But also, her relationship with men is so fucked up because she spent so many years depending on them for money because she refused to get a job. And that's a callous thing to say, and I don't mean it in a disrespectful way.
Yeah.
But she just refused to work. She would get jobs, she would stay with them for like a month, and then she'd quit and she'd meet some guy with money. And then we'd be like, he'll look after me. So she put herself in a position where she was depending on these men, but they were awful to her. But she felt like she couldn't leave because she didn't have any money. And very, when I'm reading it, I'm very much like going, Anna, get a job.
Get a job.
Anna, get a job. Like, Anna, that is no way victim shaming. These men were horrible to her. There was no excuse for it. But a lot of the time she was just in this cycle and she couldn't get out of it. And it was self-destructive, and she's a self-destructive person. She wants to hurt herself. Like, she wants to be in pain. She wants to, like, feel bad. Like, that's her coping mechanism. Oh, so you can see with regards her self-harm and her eating, another way of doing that was being with these men. So it is, it's not a great read. I give it like a 2.5 out of 5 so far.
Oh.
But it's NDA'd. Up the arsehole.
Jesus.
She is not allowed to talk about him. Hmm. He got his lawyers involved because as much as he's Mr. Like, he's so desperate for people to like him.
Oh, he is.
It's actually pathetic to watch. Yeah, yeah. And he'll admit that.
Yeah.
He just wants people to like him, but he's actually not a nice person.
Yeah, no,
he's a pretty terrible person.
That's really common in comedians.
Yeah. That's why I would say, like, I swear to God, when kids are born, their mothers should be like, hey, don't date comedians. But anyway, sorry, that was a tangent, but yeah.
Hey, Colin, tell us about the Patreon.
Sure thing, Lily Pops. Hey there, MMI fans, it's me, Colin, and do I have news for you. It's all going down over at www.patreon.com/murdermostirish, where we've totally revamped our Patreon offering for you mega fans. That's right, now all of your favourite Patreon stuff can be found in one place as we bring you our MMI Super Show exclusively for Patreon, featuring all the usual banter and chat between Emma and Sarah Jane, plus me thrown into the bargain, along with Lily's Tales, Maximilian's Bailbag, and some surprises along the way. But that's not all. Every single week, due to popular demand, we will be bringing you a full-length story, whether it be Miscellaneous Most Irish for those cases that just don't fit on the main show, Murder Most International for those cases you guys have been crying out for, or even Music Most Awesome, where we talk about our favorite albums. But wait, there's even more! How about MMI Drive, the fan favorite podcast show where Emma and Sarah Jane drive around Dublin talking about all sorts of shite, plus our monthly Ask Me Arse segment where you get to pick the brains of the girls and maybe even ask me a question or two. So what are you waiting for? Come on over to www.patreon.com/murdermostirish and join in the fun for only €6 a month.
Give my mammy €6.
Okay, so this week I am covering the case of the murder of Lisa Doyle. There are trigger warnings here for mentions, of course, of control, domestic abuse, and extreme violence towards a woman. My references are Irish Times, Irish Independent, The Sunday World, a book by Lisa's sister, Angela, called Loving Lisa. I got information for that. And obviously, again, the wonderful T.G. Cahir collection of true crime short documentaries called Maru in Her Mask. So just that, they're my references. I'll put everything in. Maru in Her Mask is fucking great. And what I really appreciate about them is they do cases where the perpetrator is coming up on parole.
Oh.
So they're getting people's stories out before parole comes. So they're kind of like, talk about this, more people talk about this, so it gets into the public eye again.
Mm.
Which I think is fantastic. So yeah, they're all my references. I'll make sure that they're listed. So as I said, my case this week is the murder of Lisa Doyle. Now, Lisa is from a place that I hope I'm pronouncing correctly. It's a place called Loughlin Bridge in County Carlow. Now, the way it's spelled, it looks like Leland Bridge. But apparently it's Loughlin.
Oh.
So apologies to anybody in County Carlow if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly. I know it's going to get irritating throughout the episode if I am pronouncing it incorrectly, but give me some grace, please.
If anybody sends in anything, I fucking come to your house and punch it in the face. Fucking.
I won't.
I will.
We have that. We have got it on tape. We got it in 4D. So in the early hours of Saturday, September 20th, 2009, a car pulled into Loughlin Bridge Garda Station in County Carlow. As light rain pelted down on its red exterior, a man turned on the overhead light, took out a notebook and pen and began writing. When he finished, he walked into the Garda Station. There he placed the piece of paper and his car keys on the desk. The Garda on duty asked if he could help the man. The man pointed to the note. The Garda opened it and saw the words, quote, "I have done something terrible to Lisa." The man, who was now extremely agitated and pulling at his own hair, had written his own address at the top of the note, and a Gardaí immediately left to travel to the property. The letter stated that the man drank. When he drank, sorry, he had terrible thoughts, that he loved his fiancée with all of his heart and she deserved better. The man asked to be placed in a cell, and as Gardaí removed his shoelaces from his shoes, he pointed to his right one and told them, "That's the one I used to strangle Lisa to death."
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So Lisa Doyle was born in 1985 in Baglanstown to her mother Bernadette and her father Lawrence. These are names I have never heard before, so I apologise. Baglanstown?
Baglanstown.
She had four siblings, three sisters, Angela, Catherine, I can't speak today, and Jane, and one brother, Michael. Jane is a name you don't really hear.
I used to.
Do you ever know a Jane? I don't think I've ever. Oh, I did. I worked with a Jane, but it's not very kind of. I can see it being one of those names that comes back. With five children, it was a loud and busy house. Lisa was the youngest, and her sister Angela said they doted on her. She was bubbly, happy and precocious. Her family were completely enamoured by her sense of humour, her love of telling jokes and stories, even at a young age. Angela said Lisa got her sense of humour from their mother, that they were two peas in a pod. Lisa had the ability to make you feel good about yourself, Angela told Tichy Kahar's Maru in her mask. She was just a really, really good person. Listen to the name of this national school. Lisa attended Queen of the Universe National School in Moneybagg, County Carlow for primary school.
That's such a great name.
It's a real school. And Presentation de la Salle College in Bagnallstown for secondary. Her then primary school principal, George Darcy, started his position in the school on the same day Lisa became a pupil in 1990. George said Lisa was a kind, shy, quiet pupil who was always smiling. It was in prime. Also, can I just say George Darcy, her principal, is like the nicest man in the fucking planet. It was in primary school, George told Marie in her mask, that Lisa discovered her love of poetry. She began writing poetry at an early age, even winning a competition in school, and continued into her adulthood. When she won the prize, I remember thinking how could she write something so deep, Angela said. But I was proud of her, and she was proud of herself too. I think I've told this story before, so I'm forgetting, it really annoys me. I won a poetry competition when I was younger.
Me too.
And we went to, what's the name of that author from Longford?
What?
Oliver Goldsmith.
Yeah.
There's an area in Longford called the Oliver Goldsmith like area. And we went there to read our poems. And I read my poem. And then all these girls were like, "You didn't write that."
And I said, "Oh."
I was so upset. I was like, "I did write it." Now it was quite dark.
Well.
In January 2008, Lisa began working in the newly opened Argos store in Carlow. The job suited her. As a supervisor, she enjoyed spending her days talking to customers and helping as best she could. Better person than me, I fucking hate working in retail. Lisa also had a keen eye for fashion. This led her to becoming a part-time model. She did shoots for the Kilkenny People newspaper, and in March 2009, she took part in the Loughlin Bridge Rose competition. And then I think she got on to the next stage of Rose Trilly, but she didn't get through.
Rachel was a rose.
Yeah, in retail. I saw pictures. I didn't realise. But she was, this girl was so pretty. Like, she had long dark hair. She was really kind of, like, she had really like alabaster skin. She was gorgeous. Lisa was a certified beauty therapist and would spend some of her off time visiting nursing homes to cheer people up with makeovers. People I like that.
So
yeah. Just to do that for like no reason.
I used to do that.
Just to be like,
yes, I did.
You went in and you said, "If you fucking tell anybody that I took that €5 out of your purse, Mary, no one will believe you."
I used to go and do makeup.
No one will believe you. That's what you said. She was like, "Yeah, Sarah, you took €5. And they were like, "Oh, Mary's at it again.
Mary could hit a fiber hit the carpet."
That's the sort of person she was. Very caring. A trait that runs in our family. Her uncle Edward Johnson told the Irish Independent. She was such a bubbly girl with a great sense of humour. She loved old sayings and superstitions, something she got from her grandmother Johnson and me. She always wanted everyone to do well. She loved seeing people and was someone you would love to see yourself. She'd cheer up anyone. So in 2002, Lisa and her family suffered a tragedy when their beloved mother, Bernadette, at age 53, passed away from sudden adult death syndrome.
Oh, God.
Which is fucking terrifying.
It is terrifying. Don't think about that.
No, that's so scary. The impact of her death on the family was devastating and changing, especially for Lisa. Being the youngest, Lisa was incredibly close to her mother and was the last to leave home. Angela spoke of Lisa spending hours at Bernadette's grave, chatting to her and praying. Lisa was a firm believer in the power of prayer. She was also a rock for her siblings and their father upon her mother's death. Angela remembered sitting at her mother's funeral with Lisa beside her. Lisa held her hand and whispered, "We'll be okay, Ange. Mammy will never leave us. Just hold my hand anytime you feel weak." So in 2002, when Lisa was 17, she met 24-year-old Gerard O'Hara.
24?
O'Hara came from a small village close to Loughlin Bridge named... Now, I don't know if this is Fenna or Fennec. I think it might be Fennec. Apologies to Carlo. So Lisa was in school at the time they met and O'Hara was working as a builder. He was well known in the area due to playing football for the local teams. Lisa's family said she was very excited about dating him. However, her sister Angela did have reservations about O'Hara's age. She had known him in school and she said he seemed quiet and nice. When she brought her concerns to Lisa, Lisa shrugged them off, telling Angela that her new boyfriend was lovely.
24
If I had a 17-year-old sister... But Sarah, here's the thing. You can't tell 17-year-olds.
Oh.
You just can't tell them. Like,
I was fucking 24.
I'm sure her family were like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And then she was like, "Well, I'm being with him." They were like, "Okay, well, what we can do is just keep
that thing of
as
like,
safe as possible and make sure you're okay. That's all we can do."
Yeah, and there's that thing where it's like when you're that age, trying to keep you apart.
Oh, it
just makes it worse.
It makes it more appealing to them as well.
Mm.
So Angela listened to her sister and reconsidered O'Hara's age, maybe something a little bit more positive. Him being older could mean he was more mature and could be good for Lisa. Initially, Lisa and O'Hara's relationship seemed to be going well. People who saw them together said they looked united and very much in love. They were kind to each other and O'Hara looked after her. However, within a year, the family started to notice a change in Lisa. Angela began feeling as if she had done something to upset Lisa. When once they spent a great deal of time together, it was becoming less and less. Angela would call her sister to arrange hanging out or a night out, and Lisa would always reply with, "Yes, but Gerard has to come too." She was just like, my boyfriend has to come everywhere we go. He has to come.
Red flag.
Yeah. Angela was becoming increasingly confused as to why he always needed to be there, but seeing Lisa was more important, so she agreed. When Lisa started missing family get-togethers, something her and her siblings deemed very important since their mother's passing, alarm bells began to ring for Angela. "I turned up to one of the kids' birthday parties and I said, 'Where's Lisa?'" Angela told Marie in her mask. "And they said, 'She's not here. Gerard is watching a football match and won't give her a lift.' And I told the others, 'That's him. He's trying to keep her away from us.'" So initially, I think they kind of thought, "Oh, she's young and in love and... whatever, it's fine. They're just being, you know, kids or whatever." And then it was more like they kind of picked up on the fact that he was genuinely trying to keep her away from them.
Yeah.
So in 2000...
That's a step of number one.
Mm-hmm. In 2008, Gerard and Lisa got engaged. They had been living in Gerard's family home and decided to move into a rented property in Loughlin Bridge. Lisa was excited for the future. She told her siblings that she wanted to marry Gerard the following June and to start a family almost immediately. When Lisa was living in Gerard's family home, her siblings did not know the address to the property, so could not call in. She wasn't allowed to give the address to them.
What?
Angela found this odd, and what she found even odder was when Lisa and O'Hara moved to Loughlin Bridge, they did not inform her family for almost a week after they moved in. Angela believed this was because O'Hara now knew Lisa's family would start to visit and spend more time with her because she wasn't in a house that they didn't know
yeah.
She was in the same area as them. Angela recognised a possessiveness in O'Hara that deeply worried her. She continued to visit her sister in the hopes that maybe Lisa would tell her exactly what was going on. To the outside, Lisa and O'Hara did continue to seem happy, but there were warning signs that were starting to become more evident of what could be described as coercive control. So this one is fucked because I know someone that went through this. Co-workers of Lisa's remembered O'Hara turning up an hour before Lisa's shift would end and walking around the store watching her.
Is this when she worked in Argus?
Yeah. They also mentioned Lisa's lack of money. She worked a full-time job as well as modelling and could rarely afford to buy herself lunch, but she had bought him a car.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
On September 13th, Angela went to visit Lisa. On the way to Lisa's house, her car broke down and she called her brother Michael to help. When he arrived, he asked Angela where she was going and she told him to see Lisa. Good luck with that, he told her. We never see Lisa anymore. So they were all kind of starting to, you know. Angela could tell that her family were starting to notice that Lisa was becoming more and more removed from them. When she got to Lisa's house, Lisa was alone. Angela was grateful as she'd wanted to spend time with her and not Gerard O'Hara. The two walked towards the town where their sister Catherine lived. On the walk, they chatted about Lisa's recent move to her new home. Lisa confided in Angela that she and O'Hara had been arguing a lot since the move. So they went to Catherine's house and after spending time there, they made their way back to Lisa's home. The two were mere feet from the home when Lisa turned to Angela and said, quote, I hope Gerard is home. Angela, perplexed as to why O'Hara always had to be around, asked her why. Lisa replied, because he has house keys and I don't.
What?
So he took her house keys. So he was like, if she leaves, she can't get back in. So she wouldn't leave the house. This is a typical thing that these men do. So because her sister came, she was like, oh, I'll just go out with my sister. But then when they were going back, she was like, we can't get in if he's not here because I'm not allowed to have house keys.
And then what did her sister say?
And she was horrified. She was like, what is going on? So Lisa knocked on the door and he was in. He answered. Angela, now deeply concerned for her sister, stayed in the house for another hour. The entire time O'Hara stood in the back garden smoking. So he wouldn't talk to her because what he was doing is he was waiting for her to leave so he could fucking beat the shit out of her.
Yeah.
The usual. When leaving, Angela hugged Lisa and told her she loved her and that she would see her the following week and they would go out. Lisa smiled at her sister. Unfortunately, this would be the last time Angela would see her alive. September 20th, Gerard O'Hara enters Lake Loughlin's Bridge Garda Station. The note he passed to Gardaí and his behaviour warrants a nervousness within the Gardaí on duty. They're not sure if this erratic behaviour is from drugs or maybe the man is suffering a mental health episode. When O'Hara points to his shoelace and tells him this is what he used to strangle his fiancée, officers left the station and travelled immediately to his address. Detective Brendan Murphy arrived at the property in Loughlin's Bridge and entered through the open front door. He checked downstairs and out the back of the house and found nothing unusual. He walked upstairs calling out that the Gardaí were in the property and received no answer. When he entered the master bedroom, he saw a woman lying beneath a duvet, fully dressed. He touched his hand to her pulse and she was dead. The house was cordoned off as Gardaí waited for a doctor and the forensic teams to arrive. So at 9:30 a.m. on the same day, Angela Doyle was in bed enjoying a lie-in when her phone rang. It was her sister Catherine. Angela answered the phone cheerfully, but upon hearing Catherine's tone of voice, her blood ran cold. She suddenly flashed back to the early morning call she had received 7 years ago that her mother was dead. We always say this, especially in the country. I don't know if this is a Dublin thing. You get a phone call at 7 o'clock in the morning, someone's dead.
Oh yeah.
It's like if my mother rings me 7:30. Someone's dead.
Yeah, but no, sometimes my mum will ring me that early because she's up lollipoping and she needs to tell me something about Lily.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there. If it was the weekend, I'd be like...
Like if one of my sisters rang me at 7 o'clock in the morning, someone is dead.
Yeah.
Like there's no other reason for them to be calling me that earlier. So Catherine told Angela to get dressed, that her father, brother and Catherine's partner will be coming to get her. Angela said as she dressed quickly, she could feel the bile rising in her throat. She knew something was terribly wrong, but even imagining what it could be was too much. Angela and her partner waited outside their home, the two of them too anxious to speak, as the car carrying her father, brother and brother-in-law pulled into the driveway. Angela saw their crestfallen, devastated faces. Her brother-in-law, Martin, stepped out of the car and stood in front of her. Angela opened her mouth and the words, "What has happened?" fell out. Martin looked at her and simply said, "Lisa's dead." Angela's world slowed down. Nothing seemed real. The pain was instant and she remembered wanting to double over to lay on the cold hard ground and not get up. Martin put his hand out to steady Angela and spoke softly when he said, "They think Gerard did it." As Angela got into Martin's car, she said she remembered wanting to die there and then and be taken instead of her kind, beautiful little sister. She said like she felt like her life was over, that her entire family's lives were over. She knew they would never recover from this. As Angela and her family began the drive to Catherine's home and the inevitability of Lisa being gone forever, Gerard O'Hara was arrested under Section 4 of the 1984 Act, giving the Gardaí the right to detain for 6 hours. Detective Murphy began questioning a still erratic O'Hara. He said that he kept his head in his hands and was barely responding. Detective Murphy asked him where he had been the night before and with who, and slowly but surely the details started to take shape. Lisa and Gerard O'Hara had spent the previous night with Lisa's sister Catherine and her partner. The four sat in their local pub chatting to each other and any friends that walked in. Lisa was in good spirits, talking about her wedding plans. The night was calm and uneventful, and CCTV footage would later show Lisa and O'Hara leaving the pub to walk home hand in hand. O'Hara told the Gardaí they got a takeaway and went straight home. When questioned as to whether the two got into an argument, O'Hara said no, that they had gotten into bed, Lisa had laid on her left hand side, turned away from him, and he'd placed his arm, right, like left arm, under her neck, like around under her neck, like to, so she was sleeping on his arm. He said he lifted his left arm to tighten around her neck, then grabbed his right arm and began strangling her. For no reason.
What?
For no reason. He said as he strangled her, she couldn't shout out. As Lisa slipped into unconsciousness, O'Hara said she whispered Gerard and closed her eyes. As Lisa lay unconscious, he reached down to the floor, finding one of his runners. He took out the lace, tied it around Lisa's neck and continued to strangle her until she died.
What the fuck?
O'Hara then dressed Lisa's body, put a duvet over her and left the house to tell the Gardaí what he had done.
What?
The Gardaí asked him why he would kill his fiancée, and O'Hara's answer was chilling. He told them that he had dark thoughts, that he would think about what it would be like to hurt someone or to strangle them. O'Hara said that once or twice a year he would have these thoughts, especially when he was drinking heavily. He said that one day he knew he would do it, that he would take someone's life. I don't know. Like, they were holding hands. You can see the CCTV footage of them holding hands, walking home. They get food, they go home, she gets into bed, he cuddles up beside her and strangles her to death.
Did he dress her?
No idea. As Angela sat in the car with her family, the news came on the radio. The newscaster said a body of a young woman had been found in Loughlin's Bridge and was being treated as suspicious, and that a 31-year-old man who had entered Carlow Garda Station in the early hours of the morning was being questioned. Angela said the car was silent. She looked at her father, a man who had lost the love of his life, who had subsequently suffered three heart attacks and had now lost his youngest daughter, and decided she had to be strong. She remembered Lisa holding her hand on the day of their mother's funeral, remembered Lisa telling her she will always hold her hand, and that she knew she had to keep everything together. The Garda forensic unit arrived to Lisa's home to carry out testing, and at 2 p.m. that day, the undertaker Pat McGill arrived to bring the body to Portlaoise General Hospital, where assistant state pathologist Dr. Declan Gilsonen, I think, will carry out the autopsy. The local area and media had caught wind of the tragic events and everybody was reeling. People arrived at Catherine's home bringing food, others made tea and sandwiches. The pain and confusion was palpable. Angela stepped outside and for the first time in years lit a cigarette. She had quit, but right now, if she could find any comfort, she would take it. The TV was on when Angela stepped back in. An image of Gerard O'Hara popped up, him walking out of Castlecomer Courthouse in Kilkenny. He had been officially charged with Lisa's murder. So this was all happening in real time,
yeah,
while they were like mourning the fact that their sister was dead. The room was still and eerily quiet as the enormity of what had truly happened was allowed to finally take over. Lisa was gone and Gerard O'Hara had murdered her. Angela remembered not hating him in that moment. That would come later when she realised he had taken Lisa's future from her, taken it from a family that loved her so fiercely. Instead, she felt numb, trying to believe that maybe he didn't murder Lisa because maybe Lisa wasn't dead and this was all a nightmare. The Gardaí spoke to the family, advising them they would need to identify the body. However, they requested someone other than Lawrence Doyle due to knowing about his previous ill health. They were like, don't send your dad.
Oh.
Jane Doyle agreed to identify Lisa. Jane drove to Portlaoise Hospital knowing the horrible fate that awaited her.
Have you ever had to identify one?
No, fuck no. God, this as well, like this. To walk into a fucking morgue and be like, not only is my family member dead, I'm going to see them in the most horrific state because somebody has hurt them?
Yeah.
No, dude, fuck. I don't think I'd be able. Afterwards, she called Angela. Angela remembered Jane calling her, and she had never heard such sadness and such anger in someone's voice. Angela, she said, our father would have had a heart attack there and then. Jane said Lisa looked so hurt, so bruised and dishevelled that she questioned whether an open coffin would be possible. So Lisa's murder was now making headlines across Ireland, with journalists calling to Catherine's home looking for interviews on the day she was murdered. They were knocking on the door, being like, hey, you want to talk to us? Slipping like business cards in under the door. And Angela said she opened the door to one person and she had like a jacket on. He put like his business card in her coat pocket. I would have broke his fucking hand. My sister has been murdered. Get the fuck off my front door.
Yeah.
Insane. The door
was... Does that still happen?
Well, I don't anymore. The door was promptly closed in their faces, with the Doyles releasing one statement asking for privacy in their difficult time. The family had to watch as TV reports and newspapers brandish Lisa and O'Hara's faces all over them, with the media giving O'Hara the distasteful moniker of, quote, the shoelace strangler. They love doing that, don't they?
Yeah.
The Doyles were utterly distraught. So Angela was tasked with picking out the clothes Lisa would be laid to rest in. Lisa had worked in a clothing store part-time for a number of years on the high street, so Angela decided to buy the clothes there. She chose a dark pink dress, one of Lisa's favourite colours, and a patterned scarf to cover the mark on her little sister's neck. Oh. On Wednesday night, the Doyles held a wake in their home. Gerard O'Hara's family requested to attend, and the Doyles agreed. They believe the O'Haras should be allowed to say goodbye to Lisa, which is incredible because I would say there's a lot of families that would be like, do not come to our house. Catherine spoke to Gerard O'Hara's devastated mother, asking if she'd spoken to her son, if he had said why he did what he did to Lisa, but there was no answer. She didn't answer her.
How did they do that?
How did they go to the house and look at that girl and say, my son did that? My boy did that, like. But like, the kindness of the Doyles to be like, please come and say goodbye to her. So on Thursday morning, Lisa Doyle's funeral took place. It was a bright, brisk September as mourners dressed in black lined the streets and filled St. Andrew's Church in Bagnallstown. Father Declan Foley celebrated the mass and had asked the family to present symbols of Lisa's life and the things she loved. Jewellery, colourful clothes and a magazine were presented as offerings. The family sat in quiet dignity as Father Foley spoke of Lisa's beauty, her laugh and her love of life. He told the weeping congregation that the Doyles may never make sense of this, of the act that was put upon Lisa, and but she was in heaven with her beloved mother. Angela had written a piece for Lisa, but in her grief was unable to read it. Instead, a local priest named Father Paddy, so that was like their local priest, he read it for her. In it, Angela spoke of her and Lisa's last day together, of Lisa telling her sometimes she woke up laughing because she could be so happy. She spoke of Lisa's love for their mother and how Bernadette would now be looking after her forever. So this is a quote from what she had written. Oh no, sorry, I beg your pardon. This is a quote from her book, Loving Lisa. So there's a book that Angela wrote called Loving Lisa, and I'll put a link to it. And if you can pick it up, do, because it'd be nice to support her as well. By the time we reached the graveyard and our family plot, I felt a panic commence, Angela said in her book, Loving Lisa. When it was time to lay down the coffin, I wanted to scream and scream, but I knew I couldn't. So I held all my pain inside and my long lost future plans. And as the pallbearers gently laid Lisa and her coffin down, I was thinking how one monster's actions were responsible for all our pain. Watching Lisa enter the ground, I felt my own life disappear with her.
Jesus. Lisa, that is the bit at a funeral that like is the saddest, hardest. If you've ever lost somebody and then have to go, you get to the grave and there's just a sense of like
finality.
This is it.
Yeah. Finality.
It's so heartbreaking.
And it's such a, to be in the ground.
Yeah.
Is such a,
to leave them in the cold and the dark.
And then you walk away and you turn away and you're like, that's it.
Yeah.
That I always find so hard. Just like turning and walking away and being like, in Ireland especially, let's go get tea and fucking sandwiches. And you're like,
and if you're from fucking inner city, let's have karaoke.
It's a karaoke.
Like, let's
sing our pain away.
I was at a pub the other day and in the Liberties, and there was a funeral going on.
Oh, was there?
Oh, Jesus, the crack was 90.
Yeah, I think maybe it's a way to kind of deal with that or whatever.
Yeah, I know I've spoken about it on a podcast before. My granddad's funeral, there was fucking karaoke, and yeah. I was like, granddad's dead!
Like, no.
And Michaela was like, footstep on the dance floor. Remind me, baby, of you. And I was like, granddad's dead.
I know. It's fucked. Ireland is so weird when it comes to death as well. So it's, oh God. So Lisa Doyle was laid to rest in the cemetery of the Assumption in Bagnallstown. Some weeks after Lisa's death, the Doyle family were contacted by the Gardaí. They were told that another woman had come forward with information about Gerard O'Hara. So upon carrying out their normal interviews in the area, Detective Murphy became privy to information that a woman in the Loughlin's Bridge area had too been strangled by O'Hara but had managed to survive.
Oh.
Detective Murphy was able to meet the woman and speak to her. She told him she met O'Hara in a pub one night. The two went back to her apartment where they engaged in sex.
Oh, so he was cheating on her?
No, this is pre her. Afterwards, O'Hara put his arm around her neck and began to try and strangle her. Now, the detective is so funny. He's in the documentary and he says, but she was of the horsey variety. She was well able for him.
Oh.
So she punched him in the face.
Right.
Right in the face. And he got up and ran out of the house. So this was obviously building. So he's like, I'm going to try.
And was he hurting?
Who? This girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was trying to strangle her.
No, but was he hurting? Oh, God, sorry.
Lisa.
Yeah, was he hurting Lisa?
I presume so. There's never obvious kind of, yeah, she was beaten. They can't say that because he didn't do it around them. And Lisa didn't tell them. She would only let them in on certain things where, like, you know, he's like, I'm allowed to have house keys. I'm allowed to have money.
I don't have money.
I bought him a car. He has no job. By the way, he was completely unemployed at this point. So she was looking after him and house and everything. He was removing her from his family. He wouldn't let her see her family.
Yeah.
Anywhere she was. She was like, I have to go to the fucking toilet. He was like standing at the door. Like that sort of stuff. Of course it can be by itself, but generally it's done
building to something.
Domestic abuse involved. And obviously I can't say because allegedly, I don't know. But yeah, more than likely.
So anyway, he was strangling this one. She punched him in the face. He got up and ran out.
The horsey variety, which is my favourite.
The horsey variety.
Like, she was well able for horse. Well used to garden horses. The horsey variety. She punched him in the jaw. He got up and ran out of the house.
Okay.
The woman did tell a few people in the area about the event, but she never reported it to the Gardaí.
Report.
And I think a lot of women, because this was a one night stand, a lot of women would be like, oh, I'm not going to say anything because I was having sex with somebody. There's still shame with that. If you're having sex with a man or have had sex with a man and he starts trying to fucking hurt you, that's assault.
Also, if you're having sex with a man, have a long, hard look at yourself.
Yeah, don't have sex with men. That's my take for today. Don't have sex with men. So when the Gardaí brought this to O'Hara, he confirmed it immediately.
Oh, he was like, yes.
He was like, what that woman said is true. That he had in fact tried to strangle her, and from that moment on he knew he would do it again.
Oh my gosh.
On October 5th, 2010, Gerard O'Hara appeared in front of the Central Criminal Court in the case of the murder of Lisa Doyle. O'Hara had pleaded guilty, meaning the family would not have to go through a lengthy trial.
Good.
Prosecutor Aileen Donnelly SC told the court that Lisa had died from asphyxiation due to mechanical compression on her neck, so he had choked her to death basically. In the space of 10 minutes, the case was over and Gerard O'Hara was handed down a life sentence for the murder of Lisa Doyle. Please bear in mind a life sentence in Ireland is 12 years. After 12 years, you can go before the parole board. They can choose to parole you. Otherwise, your sentence does go on. So that's what a life sentence is in Ireland. In the family's impact statement, Angela said, "We've always said we'd never talk about him. We're concentrating on Lisa's life and what she gave up. We think about how much we adored her and that's what kept us strong. She'll never be left out of anything, and every year we'll celebrate her birthday on April 24th. Lisa loved music and poetry. She was an amazing athlete and believed in helping others. She did charity work that none of us knew about. She never shouted from the rooftops about it. She was too modest for that. She was also really funny and was a great comic. She once told me that she sometimes woke up laughing. One chapter has been closed, but to be honest, I don't know what to say. No one will ever understand what we're going through, and I wouldn't want them to. Because if they did understand, it would mean that they've gone through the same thing, and you'd never, never want that for anyone else. We'll never expect it to be easy. We have to mind and protect each other. We want to honour Lisa, do her proud, and make her proud of us."
They're such elegant people.
Her sister is incredible. Her sister is a writer. I think she's a radio journalist, as far as I know. Okay. And she's so eloquent and so well spoken. And I don't even know, who cares if she's what? Well spoken can sometimes be slightly placid.
Yeah, term. Yeah, but you know what, no, I mean? She's just got.
She just has a way of grace. Yes, yeah, the grace this family has. The grace for them to turn around and say to the family of the man who murdered their child, come and say goodbye to her.
But
that's beyond grace. Like, I know, I don't know if I could do that. As a person, I don't know if someone, someone hurt or murdered somebody in my family, I don't know if I'd be like, yeah, come on in. I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah.
I don't. I can't say that I would. I would love to say that I could do that, but they're just incredible people. Lisa's death, as is common in cases of murder, caused a separation in the Doyle family. Sometimes being around the people who most remind you of the loved one you've lost in a horrific way is just too painful. Our mother's death brought us together, Angela told Maru in her mask, but Lisa's death separated us. We couldn't be together. Lisa was the life and soul of the family, and the beautiful energy was gone. However, Angela said, a couple of years later, the bond had returned to their family. Fighting to keep Lisa's memory alive has led to some joy coming back and has made them incredibly protective of each other. Angela has not only written a book about Lisa's life and death, but she's also gotten involved in advocacy groups for people who are victims of domestic abuse and coercive control. Angela started the Wellness Project along with a podcast of the same name, which has some very good guests on it.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you just pop onto Apple Podcasts and type in the Wellness Project, you'll find Angela's podcast. Angela fights for resources for people and families who have been victims of homicide as well as domestic abuse. She told Maru in her mask that it is beyond shocking that O'Hara could be out in 4 years. Quote, I do think it's shocking that I could be walking the streets in less than what, 4 years. I do believe he is a threat. How could he not be? But I don't carry this energy with me because I have to mind me. And if I were allowed to go into the darkness, it would never end. I have children. I have a life. I can't let him ruin that too. He's already taken enough. And that is the case of the murder of Lisa Doyle. I think he is up for parole pretty soon. I know Lisa's poor family are going to have to go through writing letters, fucking sitting in rooms, telling people why the government shouldn't release a man that fucking strangled their sister to death with lace and said he wanted to do it and would do it again.
Yeah. He sounds like a serial killer.
Like, that is, and the fact that they were able to find the other woman that was like, he did this to me. He did this to me too.
Mm.
And him, that was his, like, his catalyst. I don't know if he did it before that as well. Maybe, we don't know. But this man told the Gardaí, and like immediately after he had done it, went straight to the Garda station. Was no like preamble or no like, I'm going to hide, I'm going to run away, I'm going to pretend I didn't know anything. Because he had done what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He's like I'm sure he just breathed. He was like, that's the thing that I wanted to do.
It's done.
I put my arm around my fiance's neck and strangled her to death in bed. Dressed her. Which I don't really understand. Now, I did read a thing. I don't know if this is true. Probably isn't. But people were saying the reason he might have dressed her is he didn't want any of the male guardie looking at her naked.
Oh.
He said it was still a control thing with her.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. Obviously, this is just, people are just saying things.
Conjecture.
That's it. But like, Lisa's family just, to send our best to her family, like, because I don't know. I don't, when I read these cases, when I do these cases, that thing where people get a phone call, I don't know how people do this.
Mm.
Like, your sister's dead. Not only is your sister dead,
she's murdered.
She was fucking murdered by her boyfriend. And like, obviously this is a small town. Loughlin's Bridge is very, very small. So it was that same thing where people were like, no, no way, can't be that one in our town. No way, it has to be somebody. It has to be somebody from Dublin.
No, it's not.
It's a dub. It's a dirty dub that did this. It's usually what people think. I love the dirty dubs.
Yeah, well,
I'm an honorary dub, aren't I?
Yes. You're more Dublin than me. It's not true.
That's not true, sorry.
No. Born and bred.
Sometimes when you say cheese, it sounds like hate crime.
Cheese?
Yeah, sometimes when you're not thinking, though.
Cheese.
Cheers.
Cheese.
Cheers.
Cheese.
Maybe that's fucking hate crime.
Hey! Hey! The end of this week's episode.
Oh, it's so funny. Lily is such a dub.
Such a dub.
Oh my god, that accent sometimes. It's so cute when a kid's doing it though.
Like, is it?
I think it's so, I love when kids have really thick Dublin accents. Yeah, I think it's adorable.
Like, and when she's like giving out, yes. Yeah. But when I'm giving out, it's really thick.
When you're tired and annoyed.
Oh. Yeah, it's ticking me.
That accent.
She's strong.
Oh, she comes at Gizda.
Yeah. Gizda.
Gizda.
And I hate it. I hate it.
It doesn't bother me at all.
It bothers me so much. And it bothers me when it comes out of my mouth.
Why?
Because it's just like, oh, it's the worst.
I'm like, I think it's totally fine.
Gizda. Oh,
Gizda.
My God.
Gizda.
Gizda. Give you what? A slap in the mouth. Anyway, that's the end of this week's episode.
Everybody, thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
We send all our love out to Lisa's family. We're sending all our condolences and love out to them. We'll be back next week for more of this. More of the same.
You did a great job.
Thank you, friend. We'll be back next week for more of the same, I'm sure.
More of the same. My case is not more of the same.
No.
It's an unusual
thing.
Ratio.
Okay. Okay.
Compared to what we normally do.
Okay, don't tell me, because I like not knowing, and then you tell me. Yeah. I like that. All right. See you next week. Be good. You can say Happy Christmas next. It's December.
No, I don't say it now.
No.
Sorry. I want to be obtuse.
No, say Happy Christmas to people.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, everybody. Nearly
hey,
Christmas.
Hey, also, Bob Geldof's a fucking dope.
Oh, God, what did he do?
He's trying to bring back Band-Aid.
Ah, oh, Bob, give it up.
Just give us the fucking money!
Actually, do bring it back. Do bring it back, and I want t-shirts made that say, just give us your fucking money. I'm going to get Colin. Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye!
Colin! Close approximation to a HR violation when I'm wanking to work, wanking to work. Why, wanking to work, wanking to work. Why, why?